On this week's Ultimate Tennessee podcast, a couple of wins and a new member of the starting five, but how different is Tennessee's ceiling in basketball than it was a couple of weeks ago? Plus, Tennessee loses a big-time commitment out of the transfer portal. Should we be worried that they're not picking up enough guys out of the portal right now? Me, Lucas Panzeca, debate that and much more on a brand new edition of the Ultimate Tennessee podcast.
Will Bowling, Lucas Panzeca, and the best insiders covering the Vols on Rocky Top each and every week. It's the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast on the Zone Podcast Network.
A brand new Ultimate Tennessee Podcast is here for your listening enjoyment, where Uroš Plavšić has become Serbian Oscar Robertson. Tennessee has lost a big-time commitment from the transfer portal. And what really is the potential of this Tennessee team? Have they actually rounded a corner? People are asking. Will Bowling, Lucas Panzeca with you, a special Tuesday edition of the podcast this week, where I am fresh off of morning radio. I'm a little bit closer, Lucas, to your schedule, and I feel like I am jet lagged, and I don't like it.
Well, you're a little bit closer to my schedule, but not by much, because morning radio means being on the air at 6 a.m. I'm still sound asleep. I'm about 40 minutes from waking up at 6 a.m., so yeah, man, I don't know how you're doing it this week. I don't know how those guys do it each and every week. It's quite an adjustment. So I commend you for that. And feels like every time we tape one of these, like, oh, well, a lot's happened since we last hopped on here. That's just the nature of Tennessee athletics. But it has been like a week and a half. And last time we did this, it was right after Tennessee had beat South Carolina at home. Since then, they've given up 100 piece to Kentucky. They've beaten Vanderbilt on the road. They've beaten LSU at home. Uroš Plavšić has basically become their best player, and they lost a big time transfer portal commitment in football. So yes, a lot has transpired since we last did this.
It's really interesting that you can point back to the Vanderbilt game as one of the first moments where this Tennessee basketball team showed some fight. And of course, what I mean by showing fight is by literally fighting on the floor. And this is directly proportional to Uroš Plavšić entering the starting lineup. Lucas, there is a lot of surprising things, that have happened in Tennessee athletics this year. I don't think any of them are more surprising than Uroš Plavšić becoming the potential savior of this team. A dude we always knew was a really good leader and a pretty vocal guy, but it means something a little bit more when one of your most vocal guys is also kind of walking the walk on the floor. That's exactly what this guy is doing right now, averaging 7.5 points and 5.5 rebounds in SEC play.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, he's always been tabbed as kind of just a really good teammate. You know, it's been sort of a chronicle of Uroš when he got to Tennessee. It was such an outcry because he wasn't eligible. Then he was finally eligible. And then, to be honest, he didn't have that much of a positive impact on the floor. He kind of got that tab of just being a very good teammate. But now he's kind of brought out this toughness that we haven't seen before, that it felt like Rick Barnes was calling for, that really anybody that watched or covered Tennessee basketball was calling for, thinking this team lacked. And I just didn't expect him to be the one that brought it. And it's not just, you know, in between plays off the court. I mean, he's really turning into a nice addition on the post. I mean, he's turning into somewhat of a reliable option down there, and he's making plays. He's getting the crowd pumped up, and he's kind of getting involved with the other team. And it's just good to see. It feels like Uroš has kind of pulled this team along for the last week or so. I guess the turning point would have been after that loss at Kentucky. You just didn't expect it, but here we are.
Yeah, and it came after John Fulkerson played 20 minutes without having a point or a rebound in the 107-79 loss to Kentucky. He had started 69 of the previous 70 games before then coming off the bench against Vanderbilt. And I want to talk about John Fulkerson here in a second, but honestly, Uroš is kind of a good fit for what Tennessee wants to do, right? If they want to be more guard-centered, if they want to take a ton of threes, I believe 10 of Tennessee's first 11 shots against LSU were three-point attempts, and a lot of them were going in early in that game. They need a big seven-footer to just stand there and rebound the basketball, or at least tip it up in the air and give themselves a chance to then get a second three-point attempt. And this team's starting to shoot a little bit better, too.
Yeah, and it's not like he's dominating the boards, right? He had six rebounds in the win against LSU, but he has a presence. He has a presence, and he has a late-game presence.
Yeah,
and that was very key, I think, in the Vanderbilt game with some of the follow-up putbacks that he was putting in and the way he was energizing the Tennessee part of the crowd in Nashville during that game. So you're right. I mean, on a role that I think a lot of people have called for John Fulkerson to take, Urosz has kind of stepped into that. Now, Fulkerson, they're very different type of player, right? Fulkerson's not the guy that's going to go blow for blow down there. I think he's almost it's weird to say he's a post player that likes to avoid contact a little bit, but I think he does. I think he likes to utilize kind of his space a little more, has that high release of a jump shot. He's not the guy that's going to beat and bang down there and win a physical fist fight for two halves. I think Urosz has shown that he's at least capable of taking a couple of steps towards that, towards being able to have that mentality as a team down there. So it's certainly something this team really needed. They needed a couple of things, right? They needed any type of consistent post play, and they needed some of those threes to go down. If they're going to play this way, bombs away from beyond the arc, good Lord, they needed to shoot better than what? I don't know, sub 30% on a nightly basis since the loss to Kentucky. Well, really, in the loss to Kentucky, they were doing that. Kentucky was just shooting 80% from the floor for the majority of that game. So since the win against South Carolina, where Tennessee kind of struggled from the floor, still found a way to win by 20, they've turned it around a little bit in both those phases.
It's a March sport. It is anything matters that really starts in February in this sport. And I kind of got tired of people saying, Lucas, like, Tennessee might not make the tournament. Like, all right, relax. Like, it was never that bad for this team. They looked that bad for stretches of games, sure. But you've got to go weeks looking as bad as Tennessee did at times in the first half against Vanderbilt and in the first half against South Carolina. Thankfully for this Tennessee team, that has been limited to just halves against bad teams. Kentucky, look, it's just something that happens. Tennessee beat Kentucky 88-58 while we were in high school, a team that still I don't think got as far as Kentucky did that season. I should probably look that up before I just make baseless claims on this podcast. But it is a sport where you can get blown out and still be absolutely fine, especially when a team shoots 68% and 80% in the first half. I don't think I've ever seen a game like that game for Kentucky.
Yeah, that was nuts, right? And on a day where they're honoring Joe B. Hall, a legendary coach there, everything just kind of came together for them in Rupp Arena. And look, Tennessee had won the last two in Lexington. You're not going to win three in a row at Kentucky very often when you play those guys every year. So, and like you said, just shooting absolutely lights out. It's hard to really fault what they were doing in that game. You know, certainly is it going to be a dark spot on their defensive resume this season? Unquestionably. And Tennessee didn't defend that well in that game. Kentucky was also hitting everything on that night. So I don't think there's anything that would have changed that. But you're right. There's no chance of this team missing the NCAA tournament. That was never a possibility. The win over Arizona, the win over North Carolina early on kind of cemented the fact that this team would really, really have to bomb an SEC play and finish around the really 500 or sub 500 mark to be in danger of missing the NCAA tournament. And that doesn't seem like it's going to happen, especially in an SEC that is so good top to bottom. And we've said this, LSU, I mean, consider one of the best teams in the SEC, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're 15-4. They were undefeated going into conference play. I know they've lost a couple in a row on the road, but that team is in the bottom half of the league standings right now. LSU is an eighth in the SEC at the moment. That's how good this league is right now. Not just the teams in the top 20 or top 25. It's the Texas A&Ms, the Ole Misses, the right. Arkansas's that will sneak. Heck, Mississippi State has looked solid this year under Ben Howland.
I mean,
Vandy's not bad. Vandy's got the SEC's leading scorer in Scottie Pippen Jr. So in a year where I do think the parity is as best as it's been in the SEC, no, Tennessee is not in danger of missing the NCAA tournament. I don't think it ever was.
So I have this stat now. Kentucky and Tennessee. Tennessee won 88-58 in 2013. Remember what happened at the end of the 2013 season for Tennessee and Kentucky?
Oh gosh, 2013. That was ages ago. You're going to have to remind me. That's Konzo Martin time, right? Yeah. That's a different timeline. What you got?
I just know I clicked on the Wikipedia page for Tennessee and the first name I saw was Yimmy Mackinjula. So that is how long ago we are talking.
Blast from the past.
That was a Jarnell Stokes game is what that was. Jarnell Stokes went crazy in that game. Both Kentucky and Tennessee, they had their seasons end in the same round of the NIT. If you remember, Tennessee's lost to MTSU in the first round, and Kentucky's lost on the road at Robert Morris in the first round of the 2013 NIT. The Patriots.
Just kind of get to spring break. I remember
that. That's right. So there's your trivia of the day. Maybe we should make this a weekly thing. Maybe we just pick a random trivia question for each other in the middle of the show.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. Although we're going to have we won't run out of stuff to talk about quite yet.
It is Tennessee. However, though, it is nice that the recruiting violations that are being broken now in January or about the fact that Tennessee broke a recruiting rule because a basketball player dribbled a ball during a photo shoot. Like, what a nice change. That is a Rick Barnes recruiting violation if I have ever heard one right there.
Yeah, that's refreshing. That's refreshing to hear.
Like, oh, Rick Barnes was incorrectly teaching the book of Hebrews on a recruiting visit. That's a secondary violation. I kid, of course. No, I think John Fulkerson's role is an interesting point of discussion here, too, because he's played a combined 31 minutes in the last two games. But if John Fulkerson goes on to kind of be a little bit more of himself at the end of this season, point back to this LSU game, because he scored all 8 of his points against LSU in the second half. He had a layup that broke a 3-minute, 40-second scoring drought that then Tennessee would go on a 13-0 run and make it a 19-point game with 1:40 left. Lucas, I can see a world where John Fulkerson could play the 4 and Uroš Plavšić can play the 5 and those two can be on the floor at the same time. And talking with Slay about it today on J. Martin Ramon, like he said, your entire perspective should change when you're a starter that is now coming off the bench, because no one should match your energy level when you come off the bench. John Fulkerson is kind of in the role where he started to be pretty good as a sophomore and junior. I mean, this role is not that unknown to him that he's kind of playing for Tennessee right now.
Yeah, and he kind of spoke to that too, you know, with the media. I think he said, you know, I've tell my teammates, go as hard as you can when you're on the floor, and then I'll come in and I'll, you know, give everything I have to tired bodies out there. I think he's kind of embraced the, I know that's sort of a lot of coach speak from a player, but I think he's kind of embraced that six-man role because it's one he's been in before. We know he's not the most selfish player. You know, we know John Fulkerson will do whatever he needs to for Rick Barnes in Tennessee, and we know that he probably knows he wasn't getting it done enough, and I kind of like the point that it's gotten to now where Fulkerson's sort of this six man coming off the bench. Uroš Plavšić has kind of become a tone setter for this team physically, and you've still got room to give Brandon Huntley Hatfield some minutes. He's done a nice job rebounding the ball, at least. Still a long ways to go for the freshman, but he's at least getting opportunities. So I think they've kind of settled into this groove here in the front court with that kind of combination. And now you're getting some balanced scoring from around the lineup, and I think they're in a kind of a good spot right now for Tennessee, and we're going to continue to learn more here as you wonder if this turning point will continue to turn or if it'll halt a little bit with Florida and then Texas coming up in the SEC Big 12 Challenge.
So how does this stretch change your ceiling for Tennessee basketball? Because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I think it's worth bringing up again because of the new information we have and the new guys that have kind of burst on the scene. Interested to get your thoughts on this first, because I'm not sure it really changes anything for me, but I'm interested to know, how does Uroš Plavšić kind of being the gritty guy down low change your outlook for how good this Tennessee team can be?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it so much changes the outlook. I mean, it's almost just a relief that they've fixed an issue. But at the same time, I don't know, because what do we talk about as a ceiling? Kind of a second round NCAA tournament type of finish. Yeah, I don't know that this drastically changes that. Not, there's no question that he's brought an edge that this team didn't have before. I feel like this team offensively had sort of a fragility, right? Like a fragility in confidence, in physicality, in toughness, that just it felt like things could fall apart very, very easily, even when they were going well. And I think Uroš has kind of gone away and taken away some of that. And it feels like whenever he's on the floor now, he kind of has that presence to take that away a little bit. But I don't know that that drastically changes how far you think this team can go. But with that being said, you feel like all the pieces are there, right? They have good guard play when they need it. Santiago Vescovi, I think, is this team's best player. Zakai Ziegler has basically been the type of player we thought he would be. Gritty, you know, kind of a jitterbug, fan favorite defender who can score in spurts. And then Kennedy Chandler, I think, could probably score the ball a little bit more. He does things every now and then that, you know, make you basically do a double take. But you can't ask for much more from Tennessee's backcourt, I don't think, right now. So really, you just need that missing piece of the puzzle down low with Huntley Hatfield and Plavšić and Fulkerson, and it's coming along. So at the moment, I don't think it drastically changes the ceiling, but it does kind of push them into a better direction than you thought they were going.
It's at least signs of life.
Yeah,
I mean, at the very least, like it at least shows us that maybe this team's ceiling isn't completely determined at this point of the season, but also that it's not going to get worse. Like, I think we might have already seen the worst of Tennessee basketball this season. And that's not a negative. I mean, that's honestly a positive to me that Rick Barnes has developed a post presence, because outside of Grant Williams and Kyle Alexander, you haven't seen Rick Barnes be able to keep a post player that hasn't transferred elsewhere, like Derek Walker and DJ Burns, and try to finish their career somewhere else and stay in the system, and it works. And it, at the very least, it's nice that Uroš Plavšić is one of the bigger success stories from a guy that didn't really look to have any kind of offense in his game at all, and didn't really look to understand the speed of the game. The game was kind of passing him by. It's at least nice that Rick Barnes, maybe with the help of new assistants on this staff, has been able to develop a guy like this.
Yeah, like he's finding his footing, it seems like.
Right.
And that's certainly, that's a positive trend. Now, one thing I think this team needs to continue to get, if they want to keep finding this type of success we've seen the last couple of games, is balanced scoring. There's kind of been a common thread in Tennessee's best wins this year. If my count was right, this team's 12-3 when they have three or more players scoring double figures. And that really came into play the Vanderbilt game, where nobody's lighting up the scoreboard. It's a scrappy, kind of ugly game for the majority of it. Four Tennessee players scored in double figures. That wasn't the case in this game against LSU. You had Vescovy lead with 16, Plavšić with 12. You do have Kennedy Chandler and Jordan James fall just short 9 points apiece. So you almost reached that mark. But when this team gets balanced scoring, that's when I think it's been at its best this year, because even in a Villanova game where Santiago Vescovy scores 23 points, but you don't get any help, you're getting blown off the floor in the early season. I think the game was in New York. But either way, this team needs balance. It's gotten it recently in the last week or so. And that fragility we talk about on offense, it's kind of gone away at the end of games. Right. And that's certainly a pleasant surprise. And I do think Uroš has something to do with that, too. Just setting the tone. Tennessee finished the Vanderbilt game on an 8-0 run after it was tied at 60. They won the game 68-60. They finished the LSU game on a 13-5 run, finishing and winning a game that they had controlled from start to finish, that they were the better team, and they didn't let it slip, kind of putting the foot on the gas, so to speak. So that is good to see, because 2 weeks ago, you really didn't feel like this team had that in them.
Sure.
And the only difference from 2 weeks ago to now is the play of Uroš Plavšić.
Here's the thing for me. I don't think my ceiling for this Tennessee team changes, because I still have to see this team beat somebody good away from Thompson Bowling Arena. At the end of the day, that's really the difference for me, because I know that bad Tennessee teams have beaten overmatched opponents or opponents who were much better than them in Thompson Bowling Arena the entire time that Rick Barnes has been in Knoxville. I mean, heck, my 4 years as a student, Rick Barnes was 4-0 against Kentucky in Thompson Bowling Arena.
Yeah.
That's not the issue to me. The issue is, can he win in Tampa Bay at the SEC tournament? And as I say that, I'm painfully reminded that we won't be able to walk to the SEC tournament in Bridgestone Arena this year. And can he win in the NCAA tournament away from Thompson Bowling Arena? I worry about this team's style on the road when it doesn't have the comfort of shooting in its own building, and that they're relying too much on a team that isn't great at shooting the basketball outside of its own floor. That, to me, is still the concern. And there's plenty of time to show that they can do that. Obviously, they're going to get Auburn at home. So, you know, that doesn't really matter where that one's played. You beat Auburn, and your ceiling goes up for me quite a bit. But they're still going to have opportunities on the road. And that's what they have to prove to me in order for me to really believe that this team can meet the very high expectations it had going into this season.
Yeah, and I'm looking through now, as you say that, at Tennessee's best road performances, not neutral performances, but road performances. I look back at December 4th against Colorado, a really good win, 69-54. Tennessee still just shot 25% from three in that game. At Alabama, a game they probably should have won even without John Fulkerson and Kennedy Chandler, they still shot 24% from three in that game. So, yeah, I think there's certainly some validity to that. It's going to be interesting, too. They host Florida this week, and then Saturday, the SEC Big 12 Challenge at Texas. Rick Barnes going down to Austin for the first time. That's going to be interesting, since he was fired. And you still got some boxes to check off on the road this year, heading to Arkansas, to Mississippi State. These are all going to be tricky matchups in this year of the SEC. But yeah, especially if they beat Kentucky at home after getting blown off the floor at Rupp Arena. You've already seen them win the home edition of the LSU matchup after losing on the road. That's definitely a fair question to ask of this team, that we'll get a few more opportunities to get an answer before postseason play.
All right, so Tennessee and Florida coming up this week, like you mentioned. Texas, two big matchups that we'll have to break down next week. But Lucas, on the way out, is Tennessee not doing enough in the transfer portal? Because it's by far biggest addition, maybe transfer portal or just regular portal, recruiting portal. is gone. And Isaiah Nayer, the guy that was supposed to be the second option behind Cedric Tillman, is going to be played for the other UT in Austin.
Yeah, going back home to his home state of Texas. This is kind of a part of this world that we got to get used to now, right? As much as in recruiting, nothing is guaranteed when you get a commitment until pen is put to paper. Well, apply that same line of thinking to the transfer portal. You're going to see portal commitments and portal decommitments. I think everybody was kind of stunned by it because we're not used to that yet, right? We hadn't seen that. When somebody in the portal commits to a new school, okay, that's where they're going. We haven't seen a lot of the flip-flopping, and that's what you got with Isaiah Nayer. Yeah, I think it's concerning because that was Tennessee's biggest addition so far in the portal. And it was a nice one, and it certainly kind of gave this offense a massive boost that's already returning a lot of production. But it still didn't fit any of Tennessee's real needs for next season, which I think are on the defensive side of the ball. Definitely a huge plus to get Tyler Barron back out of the portal. I think he would have been in a huge hole depth-wise at pass rusher if he continues to stay in there and looks for a new home. But he's back. You still got holes to fill at linebacker. You still got holes to fill at defensive back. You saw how poor the performance from the secondary was in the Music City Bowl. Nothing's been done to kind of try and fix that. Now you've still got spring ball coming up and an entire summer where you see a ton of transfer portal activity. So, like, you know, we're doing this on January 25th. It's fair to have concerns, but understand there are still months and months and months of work to be done in this area before the season starts. The portal is not something we're like, okay, by June 1st, you got to have all your portal. No, it's 24/7, 365. Uh-huh. That probably should change at some point with some stipulations, but right now that's not the case. Tennessee's got time to fix it, but they need to fix it because you're right. Their biggest addition in the portal just backed out, and he didn't even address one of their biggest needs.
Well, and they need like two corners. Like they need a nickel and they need an outside corner like tomorrow.
Yeah,
it is a glaring, glaring need. The secondary looks really, really thin going into next season. So time will tell what they're able to do on that front. Maybe at the wide receiver position, they're kind of good at tight end, and they're looking pretty solid on the offensive line, returning a lot of experience up there. But defensive back is just a major, major issue for this team. Who's going to cover and who's going to rush the passer? Because as the 2020 Tennessee Titans showed you, that when you have question marks at both of those positions, your defense just isn't going to be very good.
Yeah, you just can't regress, right? Because the defense started out so well last season. Mm-hmm. You started out, you kind of blew away all expectations. Tim Banks was in the conversation. He was a semifinalist for the Broyles Award, given to the nation's top college football assistant coach. I mean, I heard John Bryce bring up his name as a head coaching a rumor of a head coaching candidacy at like Virginia Tech or something. Yeah. But they petered out. They kind of ran out of gas. They lost some bodies. Alante Taylor skips the bowl game, and they really suffer on the back end. You cannot take a step back, not only in play, but in personnel in 2022, right? Like the excuse is built in 2021 when you superseded all expectations. All right, that's kind of out the door now. You need to be bolstering the depth and physicality and size and speed of your defense. If all those categories are one or two steps below in 2022, then yeah, I think that's a pretty big problem.
All right. So that finishes up the rundown for today's episode. I'm going to knock on wood because we talked a lot about the drama-free, no recruiting violations, you know, all the stuff that's gone on for Tennessee. So let's all knock on wood collectively, make sure that we are not doing our part. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't. That's good content. I don't know. I'm kind of iffy on that, but
I just did.
All right, perfect. Sounds good. As I won't then. We don't want to double jinx it. make sure you subscribe to the podcast, The Ultimate Tennessee Podcast, middle of every week. This basketball season, we keep things rolling on. Back at it next week, Lucas.
Yes, sir. Back at it next week, and I'm sure we will have plenty to get into.
We certainly will. Always do. For Lucas Panzeca, I am Will Bowling, signing off on a new episode of The Ultimate Tennessee Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.